up a flight of stairs, and I could feel the bass thumping from deep inside the building, like the erratic heartbeat of some monstrous beast. He led us up to the second floor, past two sets of security, and then stopped at a bar. He beckoned the bartender. The man jumped to comply. As he neared, I abruptly halted, instinctively grasping at my core of power to restrain him with cords of magic so he couldn't move. My eyes darted around, making sure no one had noticed. The bartender looked terrified. I leaned over the counter.
"Who are you?"
I growled, staring into his horizontal pupils. The pupils of a dragon. The man looked about to soil himself.
"I can't move. Why can't I move?"
"I'm a wizard, and am holding you still." I smiled back, pleased at the fear that I had caused the sneaky dragon. I wouldn't give them the chance to even attempt mind games on me tonight. His face paled, and Clyde looked mollified, as if suddenly realizing that he had done something to risk his job, but not knowing exactly what I had done to immobilize his bartender.
"It's the contacts, Master Temple. That's what I was trying to show you. Everyone is wearing them. It's required by the wishes of the patron sponsor for tonight's dance competition."
I blinked, and then looked around. One by one, I realized that Clyde was right. Everyone had the same horizontal dragon-eyed pupils. I shivered, understanding now how dangerous the situation had become. That we could very easily be outnumbered if everyone looked like a dragon. We wouldn't be able to tell regulars from freaks. And that was probably the fucking point. I was suddenly interested in who this patron was, fearing that the Dragon Lord had been working one step ahead of me. I let the bartender go, waving him away. Instead of resuming work, he darted towards the restroom, holding the rear of his pants without embarrassment. I shook my head. I guess I had literally scared him shitless. That was a first. A lingerie-clad hostess glided up beside Tori and Gunner, her dragon-eyed contacts shining in icy blue, leaning in close to help them put in their contacts. A minute later, Tori and Gunner each had donned their disguise and were studying the crowd, ready for anything. Gunner shrugged at my look, fiery red dragon eyes turning to me.
"If we're the only ones without the contacts, it will be pretty easy to pick us out in the crowd."
I nodded, but was still angry. I hated being one step behind.
"Who is this patron, and where are your contacts?"
I asked Clyde, as I slid on my own pair. They looked bright green in the case. I had worn contacts before in several Halloween costume contests, so knew how to do it fairly easily.
"Since I am normally outside, I wasn't wearing them. Same with the bouncer downstairs. Didn't want to ruin the surprise for the guests," he answered.
"The patron, although, I'm sure it is just a nickname. It's called Rego. Perhaps he's a DJ or a rising rap star hoping to gain favor from the city. He is running a bit late, but said he would be here soon. He requested that if the Master Temple should arrive, he might be granted a few moments of your time. If it wasn't too much trouble, of course. It seems you caused quite the stir at the Eads Bridge this afternoon. It's all over the news. Archangel, they're calling you,"
Clyde said neutrally, no doubt itching to ask more. I said nothing, letting him think what he wished. The fucking news again. My secret was no more. Oh well, nothing to be done for it now.
Rego. That was the name of the black dragon that the dragon hunters warned me about. They would owe me big time if they were somehow able to bag him tonight after I tipped them off to this location. But how had he known I would be here? Had the Dragon Lord been lying to me?
Was the Dragon Lord really Rego? And had someone followed us here? Or were the two working together? "I was on the news?" I asked. Clyde nodded slowly, as if I were deft.
"Did you really slay a dragon? They say you're a wizard,"
he asked as if embarrassed at the question. Then his eyes trailed back to the bartender, who had run to the bathroom, and his shoulders tightened, as if suddenly believing the man's fear. "More than one, but the news only heard about the one on the bridge." I basked in the shock on his face. "Perhaps I could spare a moment or so. I am meeting a client here myself, but if Rego arrives before I leave, then I might say hello."
"Well, I will direct him your way when he arrives. It's been a real pleasure meeting you. But I need to get back to the front. If you need anything at all, just tell the waitress, Archangel, and she will supply whatever you or your party desires."
The implication was heavy, and for the first time, I wondered what kind of club this was. Or was I reading too deep into things? Maybe I should have researched the place before telling my client I would meet him here.
I had heard the name of the club through passing conversation and advertisements around town, and it had simply been the first place I thought of. Plus, I knew it had a rooftop bar. Always have a secondary escape option. Maybe a little more research would have been smart. Tori and Gunnar had moved over towards a balcony that overlooked the main floor below, and I saw their dragon contacts wide and clear as they watched a show below them in amazement. As I saw what had caught their attention, my eyes widened too. It was like Cirque du Soleil meets Hustler magazine. Three separate stages stood below us, with shiny steel poles climbing up to the ceiling above my head. As I followed the pole up, I realized that a nude woman was hanging by her thighs, arms outstretched, breasts hanging freely, and kissing the neck of a guest on the same level as me. She was 30 feet above the first floor stage, barely holding on to the pole, and still seducing people on the floor above. The guest folded a $20 bill and tucked it inside a feather collar around the stripper's neck. I shook my head, and noticed that Tori looked downright ravenous as she watched. I pinched her arm and she gasped, flushing red as she met my eyes. "Sorry, just incredibly impressed," she said, but didn't sound convincing. I shook my head with an amused smile. Glancing back down, I saw a dance floor full of bodies writhing and thrashing to the music, dragon eyes everywhere. I noticed a few strippers here and there, enticing couples into better positions, fueling their libido, but remaining just out of grasp of two eager hands. Bouncers stood positioned through the room, ready to be anywhere at a moment's notice. I saw one stripper leading a young couple off to a back room and shook my head in disbelief. A dance club and a strip club. Who knew? I pulled Tori and Gunnar's sleeve away from the railing. So, I guess I didn't research the locale very well. I had no idea it was a strip club. I swear. Gunnar frowned at me, not believing a word. Seriously, but let's go up onto the roof. Perhaps it's more G-rated up there. That's where I'm meeting my client anyway. They nodded, following me as I searched for the roof access to the top floor of the club, where hopefully nudity would be frowned upon by neighbors across the street, if not discouraged outright by the cold weather. I found the door and climbed up a narrow set of wooden stairs, my posse in tow behind me. We exited onto a wooden dance floor sheltered by a glass-ceilinged area, with couches and divans around the perimeter where couples cuddled up beside each other or strippers performed lap dances in public view. Jesus, I felt like a prude. Don't get me wrong, I love the female body, and I have even visited a strip club or a dozen, but I was focused on business tonight, and I had a female guest with me, making everything slightly more uncomfortable, even though Tori seemed to be enjoying herself just fine as she studied several of the dancers acutely. Heat lamps dotted the roof, keeping the air tolerable, and hidden speakers thumped loudly with different music than downstairs. I scanned the tangle of bodies, even peering around the shoulder of a dancer writhing upon a black-clothed man in one of the plush chairs. Her breasts almost hit me in the face as she turned into me, startled at my cold-fingered touch. Her dragon eyes instinctively startled me as she looked me up and down.
"Care for a dance, love?" she purred.
I shook my head. "No, I was just looking for someone."
I could be someone,"
she whispered sensually. I shook my head again and strode away. Scanning the dragon-eyed people around us, I began to feel nervous. This was bad. Very, very bad. There was no way for me to spot a real dragon before it was too late. And with Rego picking the dress code, odds were that he wouldn't be alone, and that he had probably sent some dragons here ahead of time. Why else the disguises? We grabbed drinks, asking the bartender if he had seen anyone that might fit my client's description. He shook his head and offered us a free dance with anyone we chose as soon as he realized who I was. I declined, although Tori looked disappointed at my choice, arguing that we might fit in better if we looked like we were having a good time. So, good a time that we won't see a real dragon come up behind us and snap our necks? I retorted, quietly but severely. She sighed, nodding agreement, and we continued searching the roof for my client. I began to feel stupid that I had never pressed him harder for a name. I mean, he was paying me a lot of money, and I had procured a book for him, a very, very dangerous book, apparently, but I had let him get away with not answering the question. In the future, I would have to remedy that.
It would have made things easier if we could have passed out a name to the overeager waitress who never seemed to be too far away to suggest luxuries we might enjoy while we wait. Some of those luxuries promised to be quite strenuous.
"Would you care to take your pick of two dancers to one of our private rooms?"
one asked. I shook my head, The pain from not getting release from Indy's affections earlier, threatening to cripple me like a fist in the gut. How about three, Master Temple? Again, I somehow managed to say no, and we found a seat on one of the couches. We chatted idly, eyes searching the crowd. It was unsettling to see so many dragon eyes around me. Even when I glanced at Gunnar and Tori, I would flinch instinctively. After a while, we finally began to relax, and that was when Aphrodite and her sisters came to play with the mortals. Chapter 34. The five goddesses swayed over to us, eyes for no one else. Two sat beside Gunnar after scooting him over to a separate chair, wide enough for three. One sat on either side of me, and the last sat directly in Tori's lap. It happened so fast that none of us could even protest. They were experts, and only prior knowledge let me realize that they weren't actual goddesses, but just extremely talented dancers. They were just enough to tease, and little enough to lock your eyes in search of straps or buttons that magically seemed to hold the sparse fabric in place. Tori's eyes were wide as the dancer leaned down and licked the hollow of her throat, but that was all I had time to notice before my own strippers dove upon me without abandon. One leaned in, her rose-scented hair cloying my nostrils as she licked my earlobe. Her lacy top brushed my cold drink, and she moaned at the contact, the sound muddling my brain.
Archangel is here to take care of us. Whatever shall we do?
She asked the other, wrapping arms around my neck as she settled herself firmly in my lap. She used one hand to place my own upon her smooth rear end, able to cup the entire naked cheek in one palm. That was it. The wizard was officially useless. The blue dragon eyes of the woman straddling me made it all the more alluring as she arched her back, leaning backwards to the second woman, who promptly reached out and gently grabbed a pleasant handful of breast. Her green dragon eyes met mine as she did so, sexual hunger filling her gaze. They parted, staring into each other's eyes hungrily.
I say that we should do whatever the master wishes of us.
They turned to face me, as the one on my lap slowly continued to lean back until her spine rested on my knees, gravity pulling her breast slightly to the side, as her hands gripped my ankles and she ground her panties into my abdomen. We had attracted quite a crowd. I managed to notice the dancers with Gunnar in various Chinese acrobatic positions across his body, and I saw one dancer fiddling with a fuzzy handcuff-type bracelet in her hands as the other smothered his face with her chest, throwing her head back with a laugh. Gunnar was surprisingly enjoying himself, which was totally out of character for him. The thought scattered to nothing as my own duo regained my attention with well-placed bite marks on my thigh. One of the green-eyed dancer's hands found the book in my back pocket.
A librarian. I have always wanted to play with a librarian. Do you like games, librarian?
We know a game involving handcuffs.
Her eyes sparkled down at me as she withdrew a pair of handcuffs from out of nowhere.
I think this book is getting in the way. Perhaps we should remove it to reach what is underneath. Which one of us would you choose?
The green-eyed dancer moaned, her horizontal pupils dilating to a solid bar across her eyes. My haze evaporated in a blink, but I didn't show it. I'll have to flip a coin to decide. I pulled the coin Asturian had given me from my pocket, hoping for the best, and flipped it up into the air. The coin instantly turned into a shield, slamming into the green-eyed dragons, because that is what she truly was, jaw. I felt blood spray across my face, and one of her teeth landed on my shirt as she flew across the dance floor. I drew my power, embracing it to its fullest, and felt the telltale signs of mind control that had been clouding us. I grabbed the blue-eyed dragon by the throat, carefully plucking the book from her fingers. Then I shoved with all my strength, fueled by a riptide of magic, and launched her into a wall. She struck the wall with a solid smack, immediately silencing the music in an explosive shower of sparks, and fell to the ground in a crumpled heap, spine broken. Dead was good. I heard the snap of metal, and turned to see the dragons, with Gunnar smiling as her handcuff clasped around his wrist. His eyes immediately changed, even behind the contacts, glazing over. He was no longer home. Tori was oblivious, making out with her red-haired dancer. I grabbed the bitch by the hair, yanked, and threw her a dozen feet behind me with an added boost of air. Her bare skin screeched in horrendous wood burn as she skidded across the dance floor. Tori's eyes widened as she saw me looming over her, her shirt tugged down over her stomach so that she was naked from the waist up. I saw the handcuff on her wrist, but thankfully it was unclasped. Feeling something on my own wrist, I glanced down and saw a similar handcuff dangling, unclasped. I shivered, flinging it off into the night, out over the railing of the roof. Tori bound to her feet, pulling her top back up into a semblance of decency. My own fly was unzipped. Damn, Aphrodite had nothing on them. I hadn't even noticed their power. The dragon stood from various positions around the floor where I had thrown them, but the two with Gunnar continued smiling up at me, one holding a thin chain attached to the bracelet in their fingers.
Good, Wolfie.
The blue-eyed, red-haired dragon cooed in his ear. Gunnar's shoulders relaxed at the praise.
Gunnar, get away from them now, I demanded.
Don't want to,
he said, struggling with the words.
I'm happy here. So happy. They love me.
I slammed my power into him, but it struck an invisible dome emanating from the handcuff, bouncing harmlessly away.
Shit, one down. I had to kill these bitches now, or I had no idea what would happen to Gunnar.
The regulars around the dance floor watched drunkenly, several shooting angry glares my way as they had just seen me hurt three strippers. Good men, but they had no idea the truth. I wouldn't have time to differentiate between regulars and dragons if it came to a fight, and if a couple of these drunken men thought they were protecting an innocent woman, they might wake up in a hospital tomorrow morning.
Shit, shit, shit!
A cop appeared out of nowhere, brandishing his pistol, and aiming it in my general direction, yelling at me to stop hurting the women, his eyes wide as his overweight frame sloshed back and forth at any sign of movement. The green-eyed dragon dancer strode up to him, blood dripping from her mouth, eyes innocent and afraid.
He hurt me. Do something, officer, please. Help me.
She was holding his arm in mock fear. His eyes turned on me, rage blinding him.
Don't!
I yelled as he began to raise his gun. Her hand moved quicker than I had ever seen, tearing his throat completely from his neck to reveal a purplish-white spine beneath the gore. Blood spurted into the air, painting the green-eyed dragon's face. Then she shifted into her true form, her legs kicking out a couch that had been too close. She wasn't as big as Misha or the silver dragon I had killed, but she was easily twice as long as a man from rump to snout and green like a forest in summer. Then mass chaos erupted. People ran, eyes wide, not even realizing where they were running, abandoning all ties with either their loved ones, dates, strippers, or friends. Screaming tore at my ears, making it hard to notice anything else, but I kept my eyes on the dragons, ready for the fight of my life. 4 versus 2. A sudden blast of fire ignited a nearby couch, and four more dragons emerged from the flames. Okay, now we were really screwed. I realized I had the book in my pocket and groaned. The book they had been tearing up, my city, to find. If they turned Gunnar against us, we were in serious trouble, because I couldn't see myself hurting my best friend. He wouldn't know what he was doing, but he was one of the most dangerous things I had ever seen when in werewolf form. It would also ruin his career if they made him shift. Tori tugged at my arm, letting me know she was ready for battle. I waved a hand at the cop, but she shook her head, lifting up hands stained with blood.
He's gone.
Crap. A dead cop. Kosugi was going to be furious. And once again, I was present at the crime. What would that make him think? But I didn't have time to worry about that now. The fire spread of the beams that held up the glass ceiling. Thick, dark smoke cloyed the air.
Well then, I think it's time for you to earn your own nickname,
I murmured, unleashing the same whips of fire and ice I had used at Alaric's hotel room earlier. Another couch burst into flame as my whip licked it with the faintest brush.
Come on down, bitches. Let me show you what I did to your big sisters.
I grinned, flashing teeth, and then I began to cackle. I think the non-masculine sound had to do with the suddenly powered drunk status of my body, trying to figure out what to make of the new reservoir of magic I had been given earlier in the day. Regardless, it made the dragons hesitate. Then, they began to move, freaky fast, like, well, snakes. I slung the liquid ice whip around the green dragon's throat, and her eyes went wide enough that I was curious if they would pop out. Then, as I tugged back, Her neck simply shattered into fragments of frozen dragon meat cubes. Her body crashed to the dance floor, twitching. I slung the fiery whip over Tori's head as she darted low, and managed to latch onto the back legs of another dragon mid-shift. It knocked her completely off her feet and sent her tearing through the protective railing bordering the roof, cloaked in flames, screaming as she fell.
"Stop!"
a voice bellowed over the crowd, somehow penetrating the din of screams. I smelled that odd smell of cold rocks and snakes again, and froze. No, not snakes. Reptiles. How had I not recognized it earlier? I realized that all the regulars were gone, except for the now terrified, wide-eyed bartender holding a broken bottle in one hand, looking like a very scary person. The kind of person whose actions are completely unpredictable. A potential spark for the powder keg around us. Everyone froze, except Tori. She sequentially broke a dragon's forearm, her reptilian kneecap, and then a heel kick sent her adversary screaming off into the black night, snapping out her wings as she fell off the side of a building. Luckier than her sister, who had fallen in a wash of flames. I turned, along with the remaining five dragons and Tori, to the new voice that emanated near a particularly dark part of the roof beside a dead fire pit. A familiar figure stepped out of the shadows, and I blinked. My client.
"What are you doing here, rogue?"
the blue-eyed, red-haired dragon hissed, still clutching Gunner's makeshift leash in a possessive dragon claw.
"The name is Rego, despite its definition."
"You would be wise to remember it, Tatiana,"
my client growled back, shadows shifting and eddying about him menacingly.
"The book is ours, Rego,"
Tatiana spat.
"You have no claim in the city. You forsake your titles long ago."
He nodded, taking a step closer, and I swear the shadows moved with him.
"I seek no claim, only the safety of the humans. I will not allow him to do this."
They obviously knew who him was, but not me. So I raised my hand. Rego turned to me and blinked at my upraised hand. Then, not knowing what else to do, he nodded.
"Thanks," I said. "But who is this elusive him?"
"Close thy lips, wizard. This is none of your concern, and neither is the book. Hand it over, and we will give you back your wolf. If not, you and everyone you care about dies."
Rego was silent, watching me.
"Can I kill her without offending you?"
I asked. He laughed, a deep, calming sound.
"It wouldn't offend me, but it might not be wise to attempt it. We're kind of outnumbered, if you hadn't noticed."
I wanted to ask so many questions, but there were too many people present, and I knew that knowledge was strength. If anyone thought I had no clue what was going on, I was screwed. So I put on my mask. "Later, then. I guess I'll just have to kill her later, then." She took a step towards me, but Rego's voice boomed again.
"Do not even think it, Tatiana. You may already have a master, but you don't want to tempt me into breaking you here and now. I can do it without breaking a sweat, and you know it. It's why I was banished. Competition doesn't work well in our family."
Tatiana took another step forward, and then Rego shifted.
One moment, he was the tall, unobtrusive kid I had seen in the alley, and the next, he was a black dragon, easily over 9 feet long.
He was heavily muscled, and he slammed a claw down onto the ground, making everyone freeze.
"My dare you."
The voice was lower now, throatier, and full of raw power I had never heard from him before. The fire continued to spread, and I could hear sirens in the distance. Tatiana immediately turned to the roof entrance, eyes angry as she sniffed the air. Then she leapt off the roof, her ocean blue wings unfurling with a loud snap. Her heavily muscled reptilian forearms cradled Gunner like a toy as the remaining dragons followed suit. I caught myself absently humming the song from Monty Python about brave Sir Robin bravely running away, so stopped. Tori chuckled lightly. Rego was still in dragon form, staring off into the night.
"They have gone back to roost."
He looked at me then, his huge black eyes showing no horizontal bar, since they were so dark.
"We'll get your friend back, but first I assume you brought the book with you."
I nodded.
"Good. Hold on to it. Everything depends on keeping it out of their hands."
My patience snapped.
"You know what?"
I began to yell, stalking towards him near the edge of the roof.
"God damn it! I am sick and fucking tired of this book.
You do know that God's last name is not Dammit, right?
I flipped him off. I risked my life to get it, not even knowing it was the same one those bitches were raising my city for. And now you want me to just hold on to it. I could have left it with...
I wisely kept myself from uttering the Minotaur's name.
With the person I obtained it from, if you just wanted it kept safe.
Rego took a step away from me, holding up his massive claws, as if he didn't want to get one step closer to either the book or me.
I don't know what is so fucking important about this book, or why so many people want it, but the one person who has it wants nothing to fucking do with it. Me! I am not holding onto this thing one second long!
Something suddenly punched into my kidneys, knocking my breath away as my entire back clenched up in unbelievable pain. I tripped, stumbling over the railing as I heard a familiar man's voice yell behind me.
Not him, you idiot.
The book flew out of my fingers as I fell. I saw an orange blur leap off the building opposite us, snatching the book in her talons before the dragon sped off into the night, her rusty wings pummeling the air as she increased her speed. As I neared the beautiful street below, I felt something suddenly latch around my stomach, painfully halting my descent, and then I was flying. I glanced up to see Rego holding me tightly against his warm, scaly stomach, his wings beating in wide thumps like helicopter blades starting up. Flames were flicking all over the roof of the club now, and I saw a group of people staring at us as we escaped. One was Tori. I hoped she would be okay. The pain from the initial blow made me curl up in his grip. I wondered if I had broken my back as I struggled for breath. I knew I would have the always pleasant experience of pissing blood in the morning, if I was still alive, that is. Chapter 35. As it turns out, I didn't even have to wait until morning to piss blood. I barely had time to make it to Rego's bathroom after we touched down from our flight. Instant gratification. It's the little things that make the world a joyous place, folks. After painfully relieving myself, I had the honor of seeing the infamous Black Dragon's digs. Rego's pad was questionably hygienic. By this I mean that insects chose their food carefully when rummaging through his fridge, counter, sink, or even couch. I decided that sitting down was not conducive to a longer life, so remained standing. He had flown me here, declaring my shop unsafe.
No one knows where I live. That's a bonus right now.
I carefully adjusted the bag of frozen peas pressed against my genitals, since the pain kept migrating back and forth from my kidneys to my goods, groaning at the Chinese water torture that would eventually, possibly, hopefully, relieve some of my pain from the kidney blow at Artemis's garter, which had apparently not been a fist, or even a well-aimed liquor bottle thrown by that crazy bartender. No, it had been a fucking crossbow bolt shot by my well-intentioned friends, the Dragon Hunters. Luckily, it had only been a blunt-tipped bolt, meant to stun so that they could catch Rego alive. They hadn't wanted to risk bringing in live ammunition with so many civilians around. I was impressed that they had managed to get in at all, but I was sure that the bouncers had their hands full, with what all the stampeding customers rapidly evacuating their club, raving stories about some crazy archangel lighting dragons afire on their roof, or so I assumed.
You should probably get that checked out,
Rego muttered from his stained couch, reclining as if it was a throne. The smell of cold stone and snakes struck me again, but now I thought I knew why. It had to do with his flavor of dragon.
Nah, I've been hitting the kidneys this hard before. I would know if it was anything life-threatening.
It feels the same as the other time. It was gone after a few hours, but I'll have a spectacular bruise. I scowled at him. You owe me. I inadvertently saved your life. He gave me a disgusted look.
You think something like that would have even made me blink a dragon form? It would have just pissed me off.
Which is when, I'm assuming, they would have hit you with their true weapon. These guys aren't amateurs. They pack some heavy firepower. It was supposed to be a distraction, you dolt. He shrugged.
Whatever. I can't believe you lost the book. Do you have any idea how much shit we are in now?
I tried to scowl back, but groaned in agony as I pressed the peas too hard into my groin. When I got my breath back, I resumed my scowl. As a matter of fact, I don't know how much shit we are in, because I have no idea why the book is so important to everyone. I leveled an angry wizard finger at him. You didn't even tell me what it was called. If you had, I would have been able to prevent at least some of this from happening. Rego sighed.
Can you at least sit down? You're making me uncomfortable. I swept my gaze around the litter-strewn room. I'll take my chances on my feet. I am fairly certain that a biologist would pay top dollar to quarantine this place and study the unique strains of bacteria found here. Rego's eyes swept the room.
Yeah, but it's the only place I could find on such short notice, and I've been running around a lot, trying to keep tabs on my family without them finding out I'm in town.
See, that's another tiny detail. Your family? Maybe you could explain that? Did I just kill some of your sisters? Your mother? Aunt?
My voice grew softer at a new thought. Daughter? He smiled, shaking his head.
They exiled me, so I couldn't care less who they used to be, but no, none of them were daughters. I'm still young and spry, and just practice procreating at the moment.
I laughed at that, shaking my head.
You and me both. You and me both.
I chose the cleanest spot I could find and sat carefully on the armrest of the couch. Rego turned on the TV as if needing it on so he wouldn't fidget. I watched him. He was a curious man, always playing with something or looking over my shoulder or out a window, cocking his head as he listened to things I could only imagine. A few minutes ago, I had watched as he tensed, darted to the side of the couch, waited motionless, and then after an excruciatingly long period of silence, slammed his foot down on a cockroach as it exited the underside of the couch. He had laughed madly, and then promptly snagged a piece of pizza from the counter. Flies dominated the apartment, but he paid them no heed, eating his pizza as if they didn't exist. More than once, I wondered if he had lost his mind at some point in his life. Either that, or he had severe attention deficit disorder, or maybe living a life on the run for so long had cracked part of his psyche. They seemed the same to me. So, the book, I began. But he anxiously turned up the volume, leaning forward suddenly. I almost decided right then to take my chances without him, but then I heard my name on the TV.
Nathan Temple, billionaire playboy and minor felon?
A petite TV anchor chimed with a smile.
Should we call him God's child or Satan's angel? In one day, he has purchased 2 six-figure cars, harassed a judge at the courthouse, has been connected to several crime scenes, been involved in a high-speed car chase on the Eads Bridge where he allegedly battled a demon, and was seen tonight at a premier nightclub in St. Louis fraternizing with 2 alleged call girls. We have video footage here.
They played a clip of the 2 dancers on my lap, much of the image blurred except for my face. I groaned.
Eyewitnesses state that the party got crazy shortly after he arrived, and then the entire club suddenly evacuated as the party upstairs became too intense for them, meaning the roof caught fire. Upon investigation, the local police found the charred body of one of their own officers brutally murdered before being burned up in the fire. Further details have yet to be released to the press. Information states that the FBI was supposedly involved, with one agent, Gunnar Randolph, even reported cavorting at the scene of the crime with his longtime friend, Master Temple. No word from Mr. Randolph or Master Temple at this time. The owner of the club has refused to comment on the matter. Is this who we want running the largest employer in St. Louis? With a solar eclipse tomorrow afternoon, who is to say what drunken debauchery he will resort to as his next method of celebration?
The news continued, but Rego tapped the mute button and turned to look at me.
I'm not that guy. They distracted me,
I said softly.
Rego smiled sadly. They are quite good at it.
I glared back. I realized now why I had never noticed his horizontal pupils before. The black of his irises blended so perfectly with his pupils that it was simply impossible to notice.
You mean that you were quite good at it? You are one of them too. And you didn't tell me.
Rego frowned.
Along that logic, I could state that you were no different than Jeffrey Dahmer, as you are both human and share almost identical strands of DNA. But it doesn't make you the same, does it? Ever changing, ever evolving. That's what you preach. That each of you has a soul that separates you from the beasts, but you are no different than us. You can be just as evil when you want to.
It wasn't accusatory. And that, more than anything, made me finally nod back in agreement. Touché, I muttered. The dragon hunters warn me about black dragons, I added carefully.
He shrugged back.
I'm rare. My father no doubt put a price on my head after he exiled me years ago. He'd been hounding me on and off for years.
Why did he exile you?
Because I wouldn't submit. and when male sons don't submit, we're exiled or killed. Competition of the women and all that. He gestured empathetically. But black dragons are unique. I've never met another, but we do tend to keep a pretty low profile.
He jumped to his feet without warning.
I need a beer.
I blinked. No sudden movement around crazies. It's safer. I'll take one too. He grunted over his shoulder, plucking two from the fridge. He handed me one, and sat back down on the couch, popping the top off onto one of the cleaner sections of the floor. He took a long pull, and then looked at me expectantly.
Oh, did you want me to open it for you or something?
He asked, looking at my face. I gestured at my bag of peas.
It would be very courteous of you.
He obliged, sloshing a good portion of the beer into the couch before handing it over. I guzzled it greedily, savoring the alcohol, but not daring to look at the born-on date, afraid that I would simply see a skull and crossbones etched into the label. So, what's your stake in all this? I asked. He ticked off a finger.
No more deaths, which means we have to get that book back before tomorrow afternoon. We can't let him use it.
I frowned a question.
There's a lot of dragons in the city right now, from all corners of the world, up until now. We've remained silent, hiding in the shadows since we used to inspire such avid hunters. For the last few hundred years, we haven't been unified. The book which you found for me, and then lost, gives details on how to tap into the power of the eclipse, uniting all the dragons under a single leader, an all-powerful dragon, the son of the dying sun, as in the sun of the eclipse. The solar eclipse resembles a black egg on fire, the legendary dragon egg.
I didn't even want to ask if they actually hatched from eggs.
Gross. Once the eclipse passes, if the ritual has been performed, that power is absorbed by the most powerful dragon in the room, the one who performs the blood sacrifice. My father will attempt to gain that great power and unite the dragons under his call.
His eyes met mine for a tense moment, and I saw fear in those black orbs.
Which won't be good. He could reveal our existence to the world, bringing back the fear of the Dark Ages, making all the mythical stories about dragons become actual fact for the very first time in history. Could you imagine the panic that would create if regulars knew we were real?
I sighed, shoulders slumping.
I know exactly what you mean.
All freaks teeter on that line at the moment.
I know I did my fair part of revealing today when I killed the silver dragon on the bridge,
then tonight at the strip club. Sooner or later, people will begin to put it all together, and there will be no more hiding from the truth. We each pondered that for a time, sipping our beer. Then, another question came to mind, but I murmured it practically to myself between sips.
What I want to know is why my friend Peter was searching for the same book as you.
Rago perked up, smiling.
I'll be right back.
I waved a hand, no longer concerned with his peculiarities, as I pondered my question. Rago stepped into the other room, leaving me in silence. Tomorrow morning I would need to head back to the expo, doubly, so now that they had Gunner, and that he was persona non grata in St. Louis, after the news had so expertly smeared his name. Without Gunner at my back, I felt vulnerable. One friend had betrayed me for power, and the other was powerless at the hands of a madman, and I had no bargaining chip to get him out. Just Alaric's warped son as a sidekick, but that wasn't true. I had Tori, if I wanted to risk taking her, and Jeffries, although I doubted that he would be much help in a fight. He was also standing in for Gunner as spokesperson for the team since Gunner was on hiatus. Then I remembered Misha. Perhaps she could help. I saw Rego's silhouette enter the living room again, so I looked up, but it wasn't him. I jumped back in alarm, dropping the bag of frozen peas in my beer as I prepared a web of offensive magic for protection.
"Aye, aye, Captain,"
the strange man said, in a familiar voice. I blinked, my kidneys throbbing painfully at my sudden movement.
"I don't understand,"
I finally said, studying the strange man before me.
"It's a disguise,"
Rago's voice laughed triumphantly.
"A black dragon thing. I've been working for you for weeks now."
"Jesse at your service, Master Temple." My mind reeled at the thought. Was it possible? The employee Indy had hired stood before me. Long blonde hair, a heavily muscled frame, and a cinder block jaw,
As I studied Rago's disguise, with my eyes acutely attuned to the magical forces of the world, black tendrils of smoke suddenly swarmed around him, like a tornado. After a few seconds, the smoke dissipated, to reveal my dark-haired, lanky client again. I shook my head in wonder. Tomas's accusation of shape-shifting into entirely different people was true. I had been too wrapped up in my grief to have much to do with the store in the last week. Jesse and Rago, the same guy. It all clicked in my head.
"You switched the title of the book Peter asked for?" I practically yelled.
Rago gave a formal bow.
"I must have written the wrong title down when he asked me to leave you a message. Jesse isn't too bright. An honest mistake, really. Although Indy didn't see it that way."
He paused, studying me carefully.
"She's head over heels for you, Nate. The real deal. She'd take a bullet for you if she had to."
His voice grew softer.
"You can't ask for more than that."
I nodded, suddenly emotional. "She's just a regular Rago. You know how dangerous our lives are. She'd be helpless." He nodded agreement, but also shrugged, as if asking why that mattered. I changed the subject. "Girl talk later. Guy talk now. Thanks for the help, Rago, but it would have been easier if you'd simply told me about Peter. I could have dealt with him directly. As it turns out, he attacked me for the book just before we went to the club. It fell out of my bag, and he saw it." Rago slapped his forehead, groaning.
"That must be how they knew you had it on you tonight. They followed you. Peter must have called them. He's been working for Alaric."
I stared, random events slowly joining into one bigger picture in my mind, mentally erasing questions from my list as the answers became apparent. Peter's rich investor was Alaric. I began to shake my head, arguing that Peter would have been unconscious, but then I remembered the power the bracelet had given him. Maybe the dragons had been waiting for him when he got home and woken him up to get the information. Or maybe my spell hadn't been enough to fight his newfound power. Either way, what Rago said made a lot of sense. It was really the only logical deduction. The dragons had found me at the club and knew I had the book. Peter could have told them anything. That I was meeting up with a client for the exchange, for example. "You're right," I grumbled. "By the way, you're a terrible employee from what I hear. And he deserved a heavy-handed approach. I can't believe that all this time you were working for me."
"I had to see if you were trustworthy before I asked you to find the book."
"You're fired. Officially. Immediately."
"Can I keep the gun? It's pretty sweet,"
he said with a smile. "Did you pass your firing accuracy tests?" He nodded, crossing his fingers in hopes of my affirmative answer. "Then sure." He clapped his hands together in delight. "How long has Peter worked for Alaric?"
"Weeks. Where did you think he got his sudden power? Some of the older dragons can bestow gifts upon their servants, but there's always a price. Finding a book in exchange for becoming a wizard? Of course he would agree. Which is why I stepped in. As soon as I figured out he was your friend, I knew he'd ask for it. So I asked instead, and then switched the title he asked for. It seemed wise at the time. Sorry it didn't work out,"
he said, genuinely guilty as he averted his gaze. After a minute, he looked back at me, eyes wary.
"How did you hurt them with that coin? As soon as I saw it, I knew it was old."
I reached into my pocket and dug out the coin. I had no idea how it had ended up back in my pocket after smashing into the dragon's face, or how it had turned into a lethal projectile. But it had been there as soon as I checked. A gift from the Minotaur. He said he got it from Hermes, a.k.a. the messenger god, guide of the lavish underworld, god of thieves, commerce, sports, and...
"I get it,"
Rago shivered, motioning for me to put it away.
"Scary guy. Did you know that he enslaved two of the eldest dragons back in his day, cloaking his caduceus with their carcasses?"
He stopped then, eyes glittering.
"Say that 5 times fast.
He chuckled. I shook my head. Who would have connected the 2 snakes on the immortal healing staff to dragons? Not me. Rago continued.
"He knew a thing or two about dragons. How did you get his help?"
Rago glanced out the window, as if expecting to see the god hovering outside, ready to drape Rago on his staff as a third adornment. "We all have our secrets, kid. We need to get some rest before we confront your dad tomorrow at the expo. He's expecting me. And after tonight, I would say that he's expecting you, too." Rago nodded, face growing harder.
"Are you the youngest of your siblings, Rago?"
Rago grew stiff.
"What? You think because I'm the youngest that I can't hold my own? I'll have you know that.
I waved a hand, calming him down. No, it's not that. I'm just thinking of something. I winked at him, suddenly a shade happier, as a plan began to unfold in my head. Let's get some shut-eye. I'll need to make a few calls in the morning so that we're ready for the family reunion. Until then, I bid you good night. Rago studied me curiously for a few moments before nodding and clearing out a space in a guest bedroom that was remarkably clean and even had a small bed to sleep in. Surprise, surprise. I was asleep as soon as my head hit the pillow. Chapter 36. I ignored the three missed calls from Captain Kosugi on my screen and dialed a different number. Jeffries picked up on the second ring, despite the early hour. Agent Jeffries. It's me, Civilian Temple, I answered dryly. Feeling Master Temple would be rather vain, but it irked me that others could answer with a title without sounding pompous. I heard the phone shift in apparent excitement.
Let me call you on a different line. Be available.
Then he hung up. I sighed, waiting. Jeffries didn't want to speak on a public line, which meant that the shitstorm was bad. My phone chirped in my hand, an unknown number displaying on the screen. Hello? I answered, just in case it was someone else.
No names. This is White Lie. You're Merlin. What happened to the wolf?
I recognized the voice and smiled. This is cool. It's like a movie or something.
It's called Covering Your Ass. How bad is it?
I pondered that simple question, but knew I couldn't reveal too much. Bad, I answered finally. But I've got backup. We're moving in this afternoon to extract the wolf, but I'll need you to stay behind to hold up the fort.
What do you think I've been doing? What the hell happened last night?
The news was pretty clear.
A cop dead and the wolf missing. It doesn't look good. He might lose his silver pin for this.
His words were heavy with emphasis, and I knew we were talking about Gunner's badge.
Fuck. That's his life.
That's more than his life.
I know. There's a bolo on his new Land Rover because it wasn't found at the club last night. I just wanted to make sure you knew the stakes. Shit rolls downhill, and he's at the bottom right now. He'll take all the blame for this despite the truth. I suddenly felt guilty. Was this my fault? Had I dragged him into something that he couldn't get out of? But no. They had been looking into the murders themselves. I had merely provided a link, a lead they could follow.
Then I remembered that my name had been slandered too, and that Gunner was a close friend of mine, and that I had purchased two cars for him in the last few days. It looked terrible. Bribery wouldn't make this look any prettier. All right, White Lie. I'll get him back.
You're telling the truth, Merlin. At least what you believe to be the truth. Keep in touch.
I clicked off after that. I stared at my phone for a long while, debating on whether I should call Tori or not. I had already almost cost Gunner his badge. What sense was there in risking Tori's career as well? I already had Rago for backup.
Did I really need Tori?
I decided that I did, and that she would want in on this, if for nothing else than to save Gunner. Plus, she probably had no idea where I was, or even if I was alive.
Nate,
she answered on the first ring, voice shaken.
Where the hell are you? I thought you were dead, but the police didn't find your body.
She sounded as if she had been crying. I'm alive. Rago took me to his place.
Good. I'm ready for you to pick me up. We're ending this. Today. No one fucks with you two if I can help it. You're untouchable.
I smiled at that. My very own pocket-sized bodyguard. You sure you want in on this? It's... She cut me off.
Of course I want in on this. The news is all but stating that Gunner is guilty of everything and only you and I can prevent that. I'm already on leave for my injuries at the bridge and my proximity to you. I'm under review. Not sure how long that axe will hang before it drops, but probably not too long. I might have to become a Walmart greeter next week.
She sounded sad, but quickly regained her composure.
But it's the right thing to do, so I'm doing it.
I'll pick you up soon then. Be armed for bear, but wear something classy since we'll be going back to the expo. We can't be standing out in the crowd. She agreed, and we hung up. Rago saw that I was finished, so he opened his front door for us to leave, locking it behind us.
I'll meet you there. I can't go to the expo with you, but I'll see you at the ritual.
I stared back, curious. How do you know where we'll be?
I'll be watching you, but I already have a good idea where it will happen. I called a cab to pick you up and take you back to Plato's cave. You'll need your car, I assume.
I nodded.
Until then.
And he left, long black trench coat billowing out behind him as he strode down the sidewalk. I saw the cab on the corner and pulled out my phone. As I dialed a few last-minute people, I anxiously fiddled with Hermes' coin in my pocket. Here's to hoping it worked a second time. Chapter 37. We stepped out of the car Mallory had picked us up in, a vintage Rolls-Royce silver wraith, and into a sunrise of flashes and noise from both cameras and questions. I smiled my best billionaire playboy smile, twirling the suit coat Mallory had brought me, and strode down the red carpet into the Eclipse Expo, Tori on one arm, and Misha on the other. Misha wore her same red cocktail dress, but Tori wore a sleek black dress with an extravagant white fur over her shoulders. My smile grew wider as I relished how this would look, a publicity hound's wet dream. I didn't answer any questions about who the women were, what had happened last night, or what was going to happen with Temple Industries. I merely smiled, moving forward as if it was my destiny. It was definitely doing what Turner Locke had advised me not to do, but I couldn't help myself. The woman on my arm looked ravishing, and several reporters tried to get answers from them, but they merely flashed shy, sultry smiles back, looking up at me with adoring eyes like any good piece of eye candy. The reporter smiled knowingly, turning back to me. "Why are you at such a public event after last night, Master Temple? Don't you think it might be taken the wrong way, that you're ignoring your responsibilities?" one reporter shouted above the rest. I paused, turned to him, and smiled for the camera. I wouldn't miss an eclipse for the world. Last night was only the pre-game to this afternoon. Then, we were moving again. We entered the building and quickly found our seats for what I assumed to be a speech about astronomy or a detailed description of the upcoming eclipse at noon. We were some of the last to enter, and soon the auditorium was left in silence as the lights dimmed and a finely dressed gentleman strode up to the podium before the several thousand guests in attendance. Alaric, the Dragon Lord. I grimaced.
"Friends and citizens, my name is Alaric Slate. As many of you already know, I am new to this fine city, but I feel no guilt at already calling it my home."
I grimaced at his double connotation.
"St. Louis is full of quality of life not found in many other places around the world. We are all here to witness the coming eclipse. As such, a display is a gift to be shared with those dear to you. This eclipse is special in that it will be almost uninterrupted for a full half hour. A half hour where darkness will battle the light, and eventually the light will prevail. Hopefully,"
he added with a mischievous grin. The audience chuckled, as if on cue. The double entendre was not lost on me.
"We have numerous scholars present, ready to dazzle you with their years of expertise on this very subject. But allow me to take a moment to relate it in a very plebeian way for those of us who are not as intelligent as them, myself included."
He laughed at himself, and the audience leaned forward, won over by his dripping charisma. But all I could imagine was his dripping fangs.
"We are about to share an experience that our ancestors feared, the infamous battle between light and dark. In recent months and years, our world has been confronted with stories, legends, and myths that seem to have leapt right out of a storybook. Take our infamous Master Nathan Temple, for example."
He pointed a finger at me, without looking, and I barely hid my surprise. As one, the audience turned to follow his finger until I fought not to squirm in my seat. Tori and Misha beamed at the sudden attention, latching onto me tighter.
"Some have taken to calling him Archangel as he battled a dragon over the Eads Bridge. But dragons are just a children's story, right?"
He grinned hungrily at the audience, many women leaning away from the gleam in his eyes.
"As are wizards. Yet here we are, one battling another the same as others might argue over a prized painting for sale. Whether the stories prove true or not, many are starting to believe them. And in that is power. Light versus dark. But power like that cannot be allowed to be one-sided. There are obviously unbelievable abilities in our world, and thanks to the advances in technology,
more of those inexplicable things are being caught on film for all to see, immortalized as fact, no matter what some would have you think.
He expertly emphasized the last words, causing a hubbub of whispering throughout the audience. He held up a hand, commanding silence.
But there are those who want you to see the truth, rather than hide from it. Old, dark, dangerous powers are manifesting the world over. But where there is darkness, there is also light, like the coming eclipse. I urge our fellow citizens to come forth with their secret powers, because we all know that the darker powers will do so in order to take advantage of the weak. We must be unified against them. No more freaks and regulars. We are all one family, one race. I ask all of you to take a step forward, as Master Temple has, and embrace your ability for all to see. Stand to fight against the darkness with Master Temple and I for the benefit of all, so that our children can have a safer future. Now, I humbly ask that you allow Master Temple and I to step aside to discuss our future plans for this coalition.
With that, he smiled, stepped away from the podium, and motioned for me to follow him. The crowd went wild as I stood. What was the meaning of this? What ulterior motives did Alaric have? Why did he want to seem to all these people as my friend? Was it a simple publicity stunt? Misha and Tori followed close behind me, Misha's face blank. Alaric had just blatantly admitted to all that I was a wizard, and that he knew it, and that I should be a spokesperson for all the freaks out there since I had been brave enough to step out. Several in the crowd wept as I passed them by, reaching out to touch my arm as if I was an angel sent down from heaven by God himself. Others shied away, or shot me dirty looks thanks to my recent media appearances. I kept my face neutral, my mind racing. What was Alaric's game? What did he have to gain from this? Chaos? Alaric waited for me beside the stage as the next speaker approached the podium, looking displeased that he had drawn the straw to follow the charismatic dragon. He was doomed, especially if it was a scientific speech. What was that about, Alaric? I whispered angrily once we were close enough, the next speaker preparing to bore the audience with the general astronomy of eclipses in the background. Alaric reached out to grasp my forearm cordially, so that the audience wouldn't think anything amiss. I tensed.
I just saved your name, Master Temple. Last evening's news didn't paint a very pleasant picture of you and your, well, my wolf now, I suppose. Everyone was focused on what new catastrophe you would cause this afternoon, and now they see you as the savior of their city. I have congressmen ready to back your demands with legal documents in order to promote your decrees into bills for Congress to peruse. Bills that will pass. Wouldn't you like to see the freaks as equals to regular citizens? All this I give you, in exchange for your simple servitude, so that we may have a working relationship when I rule. After all, you did find my book. I owed you something in exchange.
I winced at his smile, letting go of his hand with more force than necessary. I managed to smile back after a second.
How is our partnership going to last after I kill you this afternoon?
His smile wavered this time. What is your real reason for doing this? You know what would happen if it became fact that we exist. It would be the Salem witch trials all over again. Your kind would be hunted down, too. Alaric held up a finger.
Ah, but not if they saw me as the one trying to promote harmony between the factions. They would see you and I as the lesser of the two evils. Come now, Master Temple. You know that it is only a matter of time before our secret is out. Yours sooner than mine. And what will happen then? We will become public enemy number one.
I do not wish that. I'm sure you don't, but it still doesn't make sense.
I have opened the gates a day earlier than they would have on their own, and by doing so have gained us a notoriety of sorts that will allow us to not appear as the enemy.
You should thank me. I would rather damn you, because it's all a ruse. I've peeked behind the curtain, I said with a menacing smile.
Well, that is rather uncouth, Master Temple.
There was that word being used to describe me again. He pondered for a moment, smiling and nodding, at a guest over my shoulder before continuing in almost a whisper.
Some people delight in creating things, building cities, painting masterpieces. And then there are those others, the ones who love to walk up and flick that first domino, the domino that sets off a chain reaction of unstoppable chaos.